This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Welcome back for another edition of Taking Aim during the WBAI Fun Drive. Our premium for you, our gift to you, is creating the next pandemic. It is going to be a loaded CD that is loaded with many interesting shows in the MP3 format, probably 10 shows, the 8 parts of creating the next pandemic, plus additional shows such as SARS and bioweapons. We are doing this because of the timeliness of the subject and the intensity of these programs. I have newly edited them. In fact, I had an incredible show for you to play today, excerpts from that show. And unfortunately, we had technological problems with the audio port system. And so we're going to be playing again the excerpts that we played last week. But we'll have new discussion during this hour of Taking Aim. This is our time to be with you. Your $60 contribution maintains Taking Aim on the air, maintains all the other programs to which you listen each and every day. 24/7 WBAI comes to you. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. You can also make contributions on the internet at www.wbai.org, but I'm not sure that you can actually make a contribution and get this premium via the internet. Michael will have to chime in later and let us know. Meanwhile, get on the telephone, 212-209-2950, and show your support, demonstrate your support for Taking Aim and WBAI. Remember, that's creating the next pandemic. Timely, insightful, incredible programming for you to hear. And also, it creates a library because you'll have at least 10 hours of programming on this one CD. Ralph?
Yes, well, we're going to be addressing a serious matter, of course, brothers and sisters, namely the weaponization of genomes of altered viral agents that are essentially weaponized instruments. And indeed, the H5N1 viral agents are paradigms of this process, because what is called swine flu, as we've indicated before, has nothing to do with pigs or swine whatsoever. In fact, in the outbreak that was ascribed to Mexico, no pigs were actually down with flu or anything of the kind. We're not ill. It's a mutant that was generated in a lab, and it's the classic paradigm of what happens in Plum Island and in the level 4 and level 5 laboratories across the United States. It is the same process that was done with Ebola and with the Marburg virus. Plum Island is in Long Island is constantly involved in weaponization of viral agents. They've been deployed in Africa. We've broadcast about this over a period of years. We've done a series, and that series is part of this offering today. I should also mention, brothers and sisters, that we did a series called From Forging 9/11 to Creating the Next Pandemic, a System in Terminal Decay.
Ralph, that was a lecture of yours, a many-hour lecture that had been a premium. It's a DVD premium,
right,
from one of the prior fund drives.
But lecture it was, but it was, we broadcast this on Taking Aim as well. And I think it's important to understand, brothers and sisters, that the system, as it reaches its critical process of degeneration, or just today in the newspapers, we're being informed that the $23.7 trillion that the Inspector General for the administration of these bailouts to the banks, Borofsky, had been attempting to monitor, Borofsky has established that the $23.7 trillion is only part of the total. And in today's paper, it's indicated that they're going to have to generate yet more trillions of dollars to banks as they profit but fail in the systemic way. The profits are going to their executives, but the institution itself is in rapid decomposition. What that means is that the system will face tremendous resistance on the part of those who are unable to buy food, those of us who are finding that our homes are being foreclosed upon, the absence of work, the deepening economic crisis. They will respond to it by creating another kind of crisis, a health crisis, a pandemic. That's what the H1N1 and the H5N1 viral scares are about. That's what the so-called swine flu epidemic invention is about, brothers and sisters. And the H1N1 swine flu pandemic is a contrivance. And we have put forward the data that establishes that. And I think it's important that we equip ourselves with this information and this knowledge and the evidence about how it's being structured so we are in the position to address the next step, which is to attempt to quarantine people and to impose military rule.
Ralph, let's go to the excerpt. And remember, as the fund drive continues, we'll play more excerpts as we're able to upload these programs. Meanwhile, what we're going to play today gives you some real insight into the issues of creating the next pandemic. Michael.
The U.S. has been a major promoter of bioterrorism research, creating all these bioterrorism mechanisms, these viruses, the diseases, and as we have documented, using these agents throughout the world in Afghanistan and in Iraq. In 1982, Jonathan King, a molecular biologist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, was one of the first people to address the issue of genetic engineering and the military. And Leonard Cole speaks of this in his excellent book, Clouds of Secrecy, to which Ralph refers. At a symposium at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, he produced an article called The Threat of Biological Weapons. And he spoke of the use of anthrax in Sverdlovsk in 1979 and the yellow rain that was being used in Afghanistan and Southeast Asia. What was noted by King is that the U.S. Army incorporated already recombinant DNA research into its program. In 1980, the Army was bold enough to advertise in Science magazine for proposals, quote, on the introduction of recombinant DNA methods for the human nervous system gene of acetylcholinesterase from human neuroblastoma cells into a bacterium. The purpose of the research is to obtain a microorganism that synthesizes the human enzyme so that it can be isolated for biochemical, neurochemical, and pharmacological purposes. Proposals were sent to none other than the U.S. Army Research and Development Command, that's the U.S. AMRID, at Fort Detrick, Maryland.
Leonard Cole is the author of Clouds of Secrecy, The Army's Germ Warfare Tests Over Populated Areas. He is professor of political science and public policy at Rutgers University, and he has documented for 40 years the use of biological agents on the civilian population of the United States in over 318 sites across the United States, as the New York Times has affirmed, the subway system of New York, the school systems of Minneapolis and St. Louis. I think it's important for us to emphasize that Leonard Cole documents that the tens of millions of Americans affected in the United States by the biological and bacteriological and germ warfare program of the United States government and Department of Defense over a period of 40 years have been continuous. It is a little extension to apply this to the world, and any pandemic of which they speak is of their own creation, let that be clear. In the Bay Area, after the introduction of trillions of bacilli involving spinal and brain meningitis, there was a tenfold increase in brain and spinal meningitis in the Bay Area. And over 10 million Americans were affected across the United States by the bacilli trillions of spores that were released by the U.S. Department of Defense. And indeed, Leonard Cole had a follow-up book called The 11th Plague, The Politics of Biological and Chemical Warfare. And in The 11th Plague, he documents that, in fact, the mutating of viral forms is part of a continuing biowarfare program of the United States authorities. The 11th Plague is a prediction and a projection of precisely the pandemic that is under discussion as we speak.
You spoke before about the mousepox that had been created. It was genetically modified mousepox virus that created a highly virulent strain that could not be stopped by vaccination. And this was done 4 years ago by scientists in Australia. January 22, 2005, a few months ago, an article that appeared in The Independent in Great Britain, outcry over the creation of a genetically modified smallpox virus. Senior scientific advisors to the World Health Organization recommended the creation of a genetically modified version of smallpox, and they said it was to counter any threat of a bioterrorist attack. Remember that when they were genetically modifying the mousepox virus, what was created, in fact, was a highly virulent strain, as I mentioned before, that couldn't be stopped by vaccination. And here we have the World Health Organization, which is telling the scientists to go do this very same thing with the smallpox virus. Professor Donald Henderson of the Center for Biosecurity at the University of Pittsburgh, who is one of the foremost scientists who worked on smallpox, said he feared that tinkering with the genetic makeup of the variola virus, which causes smallpox, might produce a more lethal form of the disease. What we have to note is that with the World Health Organization and the work that goes on by the armed forces in the United States, that it wouldn't be inadvertent that the genetic modification of the variola virus, that it would be intentional to create a more virulent form of smallpox, so that the hundreds of millions of doses of smallpox vaccine that is still in storage, even though smallpox has been eradicated, all these vaccines would be useless should a genetically modified version of smallpox be created in a laboratory. Now, if the World Health Organization is recommending the creation of this version of variola, we must anticipate that it is already being done in the Defense Department laboratories.
Yes, well, the work of Leonard Cole, both in Clouds of Secrecy and 11th Plague, is absolutely explicit about this. The U.S. Army, he states, has incorporated recombinant DNA work into its program. By recombinant DNA methods of the human nervous system gene of acetylcholinesterase from human neuroblastoma cells into bacteria, they are obtaining microorganisms which synthesize the human enzyme so they may be isolated for biochemical, neurochemical, and pharmacological work. This is under the U.S. Army Research and Development Command at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and they demonstrate that the biological warfare program includes the manufacturing of the enzyme acetylcholinesterase, essential to the transmission of nerve impulses and nerve gases. The recombinant DNA is prepared for other toxin research, creating toxins through genetic engineering technology and introducing the gene for pneumococcus toxins into E. coli. This is the kind of experimentation that is inducing an expanded program for recombinant DNA work. This is for military purposes. It has been done years ago. It has nothing to do with defense. And in fact, as he describes this, he states, quoting Sheldon Krimsky, a social scientist at Tufts University, "There are no assurances that this rDNA technology is not being used by the Department of Defense to produce new biological weapons. There is no distinction between offensive and defensive biological weapons. It doesn't make any sense to speak about defensive biological weapons. They are always offensive.
Now, this was noted by 700 scientists in the United States. Not every scientist is going along with this game plan. And it included two Nobel laureates. The New York Times reported March 1st of this year that 700 scientists signed a petition against the United States government's emphasis on so-called biodefense, with $1.5 billion being spent on this research on so-called bioterrorist threats. The scientists say that money is being funneled away from research on common diseases. And let's look at the shifts that are taking place. Diseases such as tuberculosis and syphilis should be studied still, according to the scientists. And this is a very important petition and one that should be recognized by activists throughout the country. Because what you see with the shifting of the millions of dollars in federal research money, it's away from the pathogens that cause major public health problems to what the scientists call obscure germs. But in fact, these are not obscure germs. These are creating virulent forms of viruses and other germ diseases that could create mass pandemics and attacks against peoples of the world.
The 11th plague is very explicit here. The biological warfare programs during the 1950s and 1960s that sprayed much of the United States with bacteria and chemical materials were rehearsals for even more lethal agents and created risks and illness for millions of citizens in the United States who were exposed unwittingly to the Army's agents. And current U.S. biological and chemical activities have been thereby shadowed by the earlier program imposed on the United States citizenry without their knowledge and with devastating effect. The public, he states, has reason to worry not only about the biological and chemical weapons in other parts of the world, but the programs at home develop them and use them. And he states the Chemical Weapons Convention, failure of the United States Senate to act to in any way slow this momentum is related to the fact that these programs are being carried out by the United States government, both at home and abroad. In fact, we have here now a particular report on bird flu SARS, biowarfare weapon of a pandemic. This is a report by Sepp Hasselberger on March 2, 2005. Are we being stampeded into a pandemic? The announcement made by Dr. Nancy Cox of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control that a global epidemic of bird flu will dwarf history's worst infection disaster, which killed 40 to 50 million people. In fact, Hasselberger reports, these are programs that are being developed at the Centers for Disease Control at government laboratories in the United States, where the recombinant DNA and the viral agents are being mutated precisely to create the very condition of which they are warning. Right now, he states, 50 people representing drug companies, governments, and vaccine licensing agents are meeting in Geneva in a closed-door session to discuss the coming flu pandemic. The World Health Organization is stating there will not be enough vaccine to go around. They say, quote, production capacity for the pandemic vaccine will be vastly inadequate. Unless other companies engage in vaccine seed development, in the event of the pandemic, vaccine will be in short supply and will be unequally distributed. So what they are preparing us for is a panic, a pandemic, a vaccine that will create quarantine, profiteering, and control, while economic and political objectives are imposed under the aegis of martial rule.
Powerful material, and it is yours for a $60 contribution to WBAI, creating the next pandemic. It is here. Again, the CDC has and the World Health Organization have said there is a pandemic underway. It has been one pandemic after another. As the New Scientist, as an article in the New Scientist, this is the time of 2003 and the SARS outbreak, wrote, quote, "Superflu is being brewed in the lab. After worldwide alarm triggered by the 2003 SARS outbreak, it may seem reckless to set about creating a potentially far more devastating virus in the lab, but that is what is being undertaken. We know that the H5N1 bird flu virus ravaging poultry farms in Asia can be lethal when it infects people, but they are now in this laboratory work tinkering with the genes to develop a strain capable of spreading from human to human. They are developing a strain capable of spreading, as I said before, from human to human, and they are creating a virus that can kill tens of millions if it gets out of the lab." And that's what the New Scientist is writing. Well, we know from the experiences in Africa with Ebola and Marburg that it is not just accidentally getting out of the lab, but it is intentionally being used in experimentation throughout the world. Please donate now. 212-209-2950. Get those phones ringing. Ralph.
Brothers and sisters, when we bring this information to you, I wanted to be very clear that what we're doing is citing established publications. Maya was just reading from The New Scientist. Here, the same period, 2003, on January 29th, is the New York Times article with the headline, "Why Create a Deadly Flu Virus?" This is an article by Jamie Shreve. Quote, "One morning last August, Terrence Tombe, research scientist at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, walked into a room across a corridor from his office, took off all his clothes, put on cotton scrubs and a disposable gown, two pairs of latex gloves and headgear with a clear plastic shield covering his face, and a tube running out of the back to a set of filters strapped to his wrist, walked to another door down a hallway to a large upright freezer. Mounted beside the freezer was a retinal scanner. Tonby, who is 6 feet tall, bent down a little to position his eyes in line with the lens. In a digital voice, the scanner asked him to step forward. Tonby complied. Identification confirmed, the scanner said. Maya, continue, please.
The scanner said, and a lock on the freezer opened. Inside the freezer were trays and boxes with select agents, highly pathogenic microbes that under the Patriot Act cannot be handled without a special clearance from the Department of Defense. Tombe wiped the frost off the box. He is the only person authorized to handle this particular agent, a synthesized version with new genomes of the influenza virus that nearly a century before killed 50 million people. He placed the box in a secure container, carried the container through secure corridors to another building at the CDC, entered another suite of rooms dressing according to biosafety level 3 protocols, the second most stringent level of biosecurity. For the next couple of hours, he squirted the virus into the nostrils of laboratory mice, certain that they would all die. Getting the flu can be a real drag, the article continues. Your head pounds, your muscle aches, you lie in a bed of misery surrounded by clammy tufts of used Kleenex you are too tired to pick up. Every year, 5 to 20% of the American population catch the flu virus. The elderly, the very young, and people with certain health conditions are at risk for more serious complications. Ralph, you want to continue with it?
Yes, this article in the New York Times, and I emphasize, we've been quoting from the New Scientist in the New York Times, brothers and sisters. The New York Times article reads as follows in continuation. Every few decades, a particularly virulent strain appears and causes a global pandemic. The 20th century saw that pandemics occur in 1918, 1957, and 1968. The last one killed 2 million and 700,000, respectively. And the 1918 flu virus is remarkable for two reasons. It caused the most lethal plague in the history of humankind. In the fall of that year, it spread across the planet, perversely striking down healthy young adults. ensconced in their lungs. The virus triggers havoc of inflammation, hemorrhage, and cell death. Trying to draw air into such lungs is like breathing through meat, the article continues. The afflicted die within hours, after they first began to feel a little feverish. Others succumb more slowly to secondary bacterial infections, continues the New York Times. In October, a team of scientists announced they had recreated the extinct organism from its genetic code. The scenario played out in the movie Jurassic Park, albeit on a microbial scale. They have resurrected the microbe. They have made the 1918 flu virus mutate into a form that can now pass easily from one human to another, reports the New York Times. Quote again, they have made the 1918 flu virus mutate. The risks involved are hard to calculate. These experiments have no precedent. They have brought back from the grave a serial killer and manipulated it so that its effects will be even more deadly. How dangerous, continues the New York Times, is this virus to today's population? Its genetic code is now in public databases where other researchers are downloading it for further alteration. Scientists from the University of Wisconsin and the National Microbiology Laboratory in Canada have already reconstructed the virus. Quote again, give me $100,000 in 2 months and I'll create it right here in my lab, said Earl Brown, a flu researcher who specializes in the evolution of virulence. You won't be able to tell it from the real thing that was around 100 years ago. Will it kill at the same rate as in 1918? Probably. The resurrection of the 1918 influenza virus is a team effort. Engaging the resources of the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta and an obscure military pathology lab outside Washington, D.C., an esteemed group of influenza specialists in Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. In Iowa, they injected a solution of lung tissue of a victim into a fertilized chicken egg, the standard method for growing the flu virus. Jeffrey Togenberger, the man most responsible for resurrecting the 1918 flu virus, stated, "There is not a respiratory virus on Earth that I don't want to amplify." Chairman of the Department of Molecular Pathology at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Rockwell, Maryland, developing expertise in retrieving tiny whispers of genetic code from putrefied flesh. Brothers and sisters, methodically, dispassionately, almost with a casual indifference, the New York Times is documenting here, as did the New Scientist, a maniacal, genocidal program of reconstituting deadly viruses and reorganizing their genomes to create a version of the virus for which there is no known immune response. And this is by deliberation with the intention of deploying this as a military instrument. Brothers and sisters, this is a system that is so degenerate. It is so incapable of responding to the immediate, systemic, and necessary survival needs of our entire people that we have to take note. We have to take note. This is not a matter of this individual or that individual. This is a system that is heading down the path of attacking our people at large with deadly pandemic-like viral agents to sustain their system of control.
And this is a good time to remind you to contribute. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. We're here in California and aren't there to see how many of you are calling now and again. So please, surprise us. Get on the phone now. 212-209-2950. Creating the next pandemic. A CD jam-packed with programs on the subject, each one adding to the research that is in the one before. There will be 10 shows on here in the MP3 format. Ralph was referring to the New York Times. I referred to the New Scientist. And let's look at the New Scientist commenting on the development, the extension of viruses in Africa. From 2002, July 17th, the Ebola virus can be synthesized. The technique used to create the first synthetic polio virus could be used to recreate Ebola, or the 1918 flu strain that killed 40 million people, experts have told the New Scientist. And in fact, as Ralph was referring to in the prior articles, the 1918 flu strain has been changed. It, well, as we discussed last week, it has been revived from frozen bodies, and it has been manipulated so that it is recreated in a much stronger fashion. But now the experimentation can be done with Ebola, and it is in the, using the same method that was used to create the first synthetic polio virus.
Well, here's how they describe it, Maya, the New Scientist. What is even more worrying is that there are easier ways of recreating these microbes. They simply add key genes to a close relative. The key in all cases is knowing the genetic sequence. That raises fundamental questions about the wisdom of publishing the genomes of these deadly pathogens, the New Scientist states. All the steps are now being routinely followed in thousands of military labs worldwide. Notably, government and military labs are designing these viruses as bioweapons. In January, scientists reported that they had made Ebola by using reverse genetics. They took the virus's genome plus pieces of DNA coding for the key viral proteins and added them to the cells. The team got the genome from the virus itself. Instead of trying to assemble a genome, you simply take a closely related cousin, change the portions of its sequence to those of smallpox. Such cousins include camelpox and the easily obtained vaccinia virus. Bacteria resembling anthrax are being made in this way. And if you're going to all this trouble, why not tweak the virus while you are at it? A New Scientist revealed that scientists experimenting with mouthpox have created a far deadlier strain. Now here is a report, brothers and sisters, in the Nairobi Standard in Kenya. Why is Africa subject to these killer viruses? Angola's killer Marburg epidemic has claimed more victims this week, bringing the weekly death to 126. The killer hemorrhagic fever from the same family as Ebola has suddenly emerged in Uige province, but it is spreading to other parts of the country, including the capital, Luanda. The mortality rate, continues the Nairobi Standard, is frightening. Six survivors out of 103 cases, and these will yet succumb. Marburg, the article continues, is characterized by headaches, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, accompanied by blood spreading and spread through body fluids, including saliva and perspirations. Indian scientists warn that a new mutant disease virus, witnessing the emergence of an unforeseen, highly lethal near measles-like virus, has been introduced, causing encephalitis in adults and children. Scientists are investigating this outbreak of encephalitis, the third since 1998, a highly fatal disease involving the brain and kidneys. April 20th, 2006, Angola hit by huge outbreak of cholera. Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, mixing bugs and bombs. Military experiments with the most harmful agents known to humanity are proceeding apace. Ebola, Marburg, anthrax, plague, Q fever, and botulism. And here, brothers and sisters, is Len Horowitz in his book, Emergent Viruses, Marburg, Ebola, and Chilling Propaganda in the Hot Zone. I spent days exploring the libraries of North Carolina and Chapel Hill, tracking down the Marburg virus along with Ebola, Ebola Zaire, and Ebola Sudan. These are newcomers to the virology scene, HIV relatives. They are being introduced. Marburg has struck three vaccine production facilities simultaneously. Less than 2 years after two larger outbreaks in southern Sudan and northern Zaire, isn't it curious that these outbreaks are occurring virtually simultaneously? In Search of Marburg details the creation of these mutated viruses in military laboratories in the United States. The progenitor of this fiendish program of introducing epidemic disease of this magnitude throughout Africa.
Again, 212-209-2950. Help us keep taking aim, coming to you 24/7. In order to do that, that means sustaining WBAI. And we prepared for you an incredible, incredible premium. As I've been re-editing these shows, I am struck by the information and listening to them. I can listen to them again and again, and each time something new is learned, something new, a new connection is made for me. Please, 212-209-2950. This entire series and some of the other ancillary programs that we're including in this Creating the Next Pandemic set are an incredible reference for you, but also will assist you in discussing with your friends, your colleagues, your family members, so that there is an understanding when legislation is passed, when there are operations that take place, military operations, which they call testing in the hospitals. When you read about the current situation of the latest flu epidemic and now the dissemination of Tamiflu and the sense that they are going to provide Tamiflu for so many people and also develop a new flu vaccine, please get on the phone now, 212-209-2950. Ralph and I could start talking at 6 in the morning, and we could go on till midnight with all the research that we have accumulated. And we could do this more than one day. We could do an entire week of programming. And that's what you will see. That's what you hear on this CD in the MP3 format. It allows me to pack so much more in. Please, 212-209-2950. Your contribution is much appreciated. Someone to whom we've referred often and at various times there have been lectures by her on Pacifica is Dr. Mei Wan Ho, who has been incredible in talking about genetic engineering. And at the time of SARS and the later avian flu scares, Dr. Mei Wan Ho in particular was presenting many research papers to show how superbugs and superviruses are created. And on November 21st, 2005, the BBC, on the basis of what Mei Wan Ho was saying, said that a bioterror strike was inevitable. And at that time, they were putting forward that this bioterror attack would be by Al-Qaeda. And the head of Interpol had warned that Al-Qaeda was going to launch a bioterror attack. In fact, what Mei Wan Ho was talking about, Dr. Mei Wan Ho, and what Ralph and I have been talking about with the Plum Island experiments and also the developments at Lawrence Livermore, where they were going to transform this nuclear research facility into a further biotech facility. What we're talking about is work that is going on by the United States government, by the Center of Disease Control, at universities funded by the Department of Defense. This is not a bioterror attack by Al-Qaeda. This is a bioterror attack by U.S. ruling class. Ralph.
Yes, Maya. The documentation is from mainstream publications. Again here, mysterious viruses as bad as they get, April 6, 2005, in the New York Times. A bleeding disease, the epidemic of hemorrhagic fever, killed 244 of the 266 people who contracted here. Lab-created killer virus sparks biotech fears. Mainstream publications. The deadly new virus created during genetic engineering has sent off warning bells. The use of this technology should be more carefully monitored and regulated, opines the New York Times. genetic engineering dramatically publicized in early January, where Australian scientists revealed they have engendered a killer version of the mouse pox virus. The same method has been used to regenerate smallpox, resulting in a more dangerous form of this virus that can destroy the immune system and is lethal to humans.
Ralph, I'm going to stop you so that we can play a further excerpt from the series. But as you can tell from what we're presenting, this is the very type of research, and some of what we're discussing today is, most of it, is included in this jam-packed CD. Michael, let's play a little excerpt, and then we'll come back, because we're only on 1 hour today, and I want to give you all an opportunity to hear some of the edited version and also to get on your phone and call 212-209-2950. Michael, take it away.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, April 5th, 2005. Friday, April 1st, President George Bush signed an executive order authorizing...
Hello, we're back again while Michael cues up to the correct place. We don't need to hear the part we heard before. So, Ralph, let's continue discussing this. One aspect that we discuss in creating the next pandemic are the plans for martial law. And we've discussed this with the Model Health Emergency Act. And also there are many other acts that come under FEMA and under the Northern Command, many different ways that the government has to impose martial law under the guise of controlling a flu pandemic. Reuters had once written at this time, during the time of the bird flu, the National Guard will have to enforce quarantine. If we have an outbreak anywhere in the United States, we will quarantine that part of the country. How do we enforce quarantine? Now, that was a statement that was published by Reuters. It was a statement of President George Bush. Well, Bush said, it's one thing to shut down airplanes, it's another thing to prevent people from coming in to get exposed. And who do you think is going to affect that quarantine? So Bush, when he was asked that, said, well, we're going to have to use the military, that's what. I've already put it on the table. I've already put it on the table. So when we see exercises, military exercises such as Top Off, which is an exercise supposedly to test national preparedness, what we're actually seeing are these tests for national quarantine. Michael, do you have the excerpt?
We're all set, Maya.
Okay, let it roll.
Friday, April 1st, President George Bush signed an executive order authorizing the government to impose a quarantine to deal with any outbreak of the H5N1 avian flu influenza now found in Southeast Asia. The quarantine list amends that of 2003, which was amended at that time to include SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, that killed nearly 800 people. Other diseases on the U.S. quarantine list are cholera, diphtheria, infectious tuberculosis, plague, smallpox, yellow fever, and viral hemorrhagic fevers. What does this mean? It means that anyone coming into the United States can be quarantined, put in a voluntary quarantine at a home or in some other location. It also means that with a quarantine list, the United States government can impose a quarantine on people throughout the United States, as it did at the time of the 1918 Spanish flu influenza. Today on Taking Aim, Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 4, Unraveling the Fabric of Life. Ralph?
In the declaration by Bush on April 1st, April Fool's Day, Jennifer Marcone, the spokeswoman for the health center, said Mr. Bush's executive order will prepare for all options, and the Public Health Service will defer to state and local authorities for their use of full quarantine powers and will work with them in the event of an outbreak. They are alluding to S3, the emergency legislation, amongst others, that allows for virtual martial law in the quarantining of populations, the ordering of them to various locations, the isolation of whole sectors of the populace, the control of all movement, traffic, communication, a martial law state.
In creating the next pandemic, parts 1, 2, and 3, we discussed the manipulation, the creation of viruses, both the avian flu virus, particularly H5N1, and also the Marburg and Ebola viruses, hemorrhagic fevers. Also, at this time, late March, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention launched a series of what scientists are calling risky experiments, what we call insidious experiments, to simulate the mixing and matching of genes from the H5N1 avian flu virus, which is a virus that could create, in the words of Janet Gerberding, the head of the Center for Disease Control, a pandemic throughout the world within the next 10 months. They are mixing this H5N1 avian flu virus with the common human flu virus, and they expect that this could create the basis for an avian flu pandemic. What are they actually doing? The flu experts have stated that the CDC intends over the next 6 months to swap the genes of the H5N1 avian virus with the genes of H3N2 virus. Now, H and N refer to the proteins within the virus. The H3N2 virus is the strain that is behind the most recent human flu outbreaks. They will substitute the 8 genes of each virus one by one with the 8 genes from the other virus. And in that process, they're going to examine all the 250 possible combinations that would create viable viruses. They'll incubate these viruses in canine, that is dog tissue cells, to see how well they grow. And those that thrive in the tissue culture will then be tested on animals. They're going to see how quickly they will spread. Experiments are planned not only in the United States, but at Erasmus University, which is another major influenza research center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. As you will recall, we mentioned that in the Netherlands, experimentation on the H5N1 virus showed cats as carriers. Ralph?
Headline of the Wall Street Journal on March 23rd. CDC aims to create experimental pandemic bird flu virus by Betsy McKay. In other words, the superbug that they are presumably concerned to avoid is precisely what they are engaged in engineering. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention is figuring out, before nature takes its course, how to forge and fabricate the very virus itself. Experiments are planned for later this year at Erasmus University, a major influential research center in the Netherlands. The experiments will produce a highly lethal pathogen capable of killing millions of people. Now, H5N1 has ravaged poultry stocks across Asia, but since the beginning of 2004, it has infected people. And it is that combination that has proved fatal in nearly 70% of the time, with the virus suffocating patients as their inflamed lungs fill with fluid, as the Wall Street Journal reports. It is that combination which they are replicating, creating, experimenting with on a crash basis. Quote, not only are the experiments revealing the likelihood that H5N1 can morph into a human bug, but they are providing a basis for bird disease becoming lethal in humans and other mammals.
You're listening to an excerpt from Creating the Next Pandemic, And Creating the Next Pandemic is about 10 hours of programs in the MP3 format, and it is our gift to you for your contribution of $60 to WBAI. Times are tough, but believe me, this is as good as it gets with Taking AIM programs. Hard-hitting, insightful analysis. 212-209-2950. Creating the Next Pandemic is one of the best of the series of Taking AIM, and that's why we presented it for this summer fund drive. Ralph.
Well, you know, we're hearing the same story as we have been over the years in relation to the current prospect of a flu pandemic. But listen, brothers and sisters, the news day on March 17, 2005. New Jersey and Connecticut to simulate large-scale biological attacks. A simulated plague unleashed by terrorists across central Jersey and released simultaneously in Connecticut and the Northeast will give us an unprecedented chance to test our ability to respond to this large-scale disaster. Here's the liberal Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times. His article is called Lock 'em Up. In my case, it was just malaria. But a lesson of the SARS outbreak is that we in the United States need to compromise on our civil liberties to confront the risks we face. After 9/11, the Bush administration wisely pushed, he writes, the Model Emergency Health Powers Act as a template for legislation by the states, permitting governors to respond to health crises with a state of emergency, imposing quarantine, enforced vaccinations, the destruction of property, limiting people's movements, rationing medicine, and seizing anything, from bodies to private hospitals, Kristof's column continues. The steps are tough and sobering, but they apply to desperate circumstances. So far, 22 states have passed these laws. The article by Mr. Kristof continues. The American Civil Liberties Union, he said, argues that the model U.S. emergency law would have serious consequences for individual freedom, privacy, and equality. That's right, he says. But the alternative is to risk many, 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 many deaths. I prefer we get the balance right. If you disagree, how about if I visit your neighbor the next time I'm back from an Ebola outbreak in the Congo? Talk about the limits of liberalism, brothers and sisters. The outbreak in the Congo was already documented as the result of an engineered military biological lab distribution of a deadly virus. But the liberal is telling us, lock them up, and he's telling us, get prepared for the same, brothers and sisters.
212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Please get on the phone now. Your $60 contribution to WBAI, Creating the Next Pandemic. There are programs on it, such as SARS and a bioweapon.
Hello.
That's Ralph picking up a different phone. So staging the operation, unraveling the fabric of life, the new Dr. Strangelove's biological Armageddon, weapons of the terrorist state. As you can see, the analysis is broad. The research is meticulous in its documentation. 212-209-2950. We only have a couple of minutes left for you to make these calls.
That's right, Maya. Only a couple of minutes left. We have two callers on the line now. A few folks have been calling in throughout the broadcast. And if we could get a few more folks calling in right now, 212-209-2950. For Creating the Next Pandemic. It's in MP3 format. It's in parts 1, 2, and 3. 10 hours of programming. The best of Taking AIM. Maya has really meticulously gone through these programs, her past Taking AIM programs, and brought you this material. We're offering that to you now at the $60 level. Call now, pledge your support, and become members of this radio station. Now we have 4, 5, 6 calls on the line now. I knew this would happen as soon as we asked for your support. In a big way, the phone calls would start. We want to thank you very much for calling right now. for Ralph and Maya for this program, Taking AIM. 212-209-2950. Use your Visa card, your MasterCard, or American Express. The final moments of Taking AIM this afternoon. We appreciate them being here. If you appreciate listening to this program and finding out the information that you do each and every Tuesday without commercial interruption, we're asking you to go to your phone now and support that effort now. The last minutes of Taking AIM, 212-209-2950. Ralph and Maya?
Please, 212-209-2950. You know, sometimes I wonder, do I have to urge people to contribute? It is so difficult for each and every one of us. Yet, when something means a lot and it is imperative to keep it going, we know we're all going to be there pitching in. And that's what we have to do right now to keep WBAI on the air and, as a consequence, keeping Taking AIM coming to you each and every week. 212-209-2950, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, whatever, bank debit cards, checks, cash, 212-209-2950. Call, and we have a great gift for you, creating the next pandemic. And this is your way to have an understanding and to help organize so that it is our society, not a society that is dominating us. Ralph, last word?
Romaya, the next pandemic is part of the struggle against a ruthless system in decay. They will do many things. They will try many others. But we are the many and they are the few, brothers and sisters. We need the data. We need the information. We need the ammunition of intelligence to move forward, to organize, and to resist. That's the task. Support the work. It's not a spectator sport.
This has been Taking AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. And thank you, Michael G., for engineering our show. We will be with you next week. Meanwhile, you can contact us at Taking AIM at PacBell, that's PACBELL.net.
Thank you so much, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. We have 5, 6, 7 calls on the line now as we go to the evening news. In just a moment, make your calls for Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. $60, creating